We're in 2 Chronicles chapter 31 in our study, and last time we were studying together here in this chapter. Of course, this is part of the study overall of the reign of Hezekiah, king of Judah, which is part of the larger study of these books of the history of the children of Israel that we have in the Old Testament, that are full of these examples, good and bad. And we have a very good one here in King Hezekiah of Judah. The Lord has given us many chapters in several books, especially 2 Kings, 2 Chronicles, and Isaiah, although Hezekiah is also mentioned in other books of the prophets. He's one of the more prominent examples in terms of how much the Lord tells us about him and about what was going on in Israel during his time. This is obviously one of the most significant individuals for us to study in God's Word, and we have a very good example in King Hezekiah, and we've seen this is still early in his reign over Judah, but immediately from the outset or the beginning of that reign of his over Judah as king, he coming on the in the aftermath or on the heels of the wicked reign of his father, and there's been with the predecessors of Ahaz, Hezekiah's father, there's been a spiritual decline in Judah for a long time now. It bottomed out under Ahaz, Hezekiah has made great efforts from the very first day of his reign to try to correct what was wrong and to use the language that the Lord gives us to set in order these things, first of all, of the service of the house of the Lord in chapter 29 of 2 Chronicles, and then he reinstituted the observance of the Passover in chapter 30, even going to the extent of inviting and encouraging the children of Israel that remained in the northern kingdom that he didn't even rule over to come to that Passover, to repent and forsake all of those idols they had been worshiping and serving for so long. Even though they had ignored so many of the Lord's efforts up to that point and rejected the prophets that he had sent them to call them to repentance, there were a number, a minority, yes, but there were several from those tribes of the north that took heed to this this effort that the Lord made through Hezekiah right here at the very on the very eve of the destruction of that northern kingdom under its last king, Hoshea. There were several. The Lord was trying right to the end. And there were several that were restored to him, that did repent, that came. Not only did they keep the Passover, and they were so encouraged in that and in their repentance and the good they were doing again, that they continued on and kept that for another week, an additional week. They didn't want to stop. Not only that, as they were doing that good, they were also tearing down and destroying the idols and the high places that were in the land that the children of Israel had made and had where they had been worshiping their idols now for a long time. And not only did they do that in Jerusalem in chapter 30 when they were there for the Passover, here at the beginning of chapter 31 when that was finished, they didn't stop with what was just in the city of Jerusalem. They went after all of those high places to destroy those altars and groves throughout all Judah. They didn't stop there either, because there were several of their brethren that had repented and had come for that Passover. When they went back to the territory there of the northern kingdom of Israel, then they were tearing down those things there too. So we're seeing great zeal on their part. And it's another example of when we're doing well and the joy that we can and should have in doing the Lord's will, and that should encourage us to do even more, and especially as we have others with us, mutually encouraging one another in good, how much good can be accomplished. And so we definitely can see that here right into these early verses of chapter 31 as this continues. Not only did they do that, of course, there's a lot of things, as Hezekiah is setting them in order, there are a lot of things here that are going to require daily diligence to keep. The Lord had commandments for them to keep that involved every day. So it wasn't just like the Passover that would come once a year. They had the daily sacrifices at the temple that had to be kept. Now, not only was this something that the Lord required on the part of his people for what they needed to do to serve the Lord himself, but part of that design, why did the Lord have daily sacrifices? What was another aspect of that that we might not be thinking about, other than the fact that they were making sacrifices to the Lord? But what were they sacrificing? Yeah, animals. What did they do with those animals that they sacrificed? Well, they killed them and sacrificed them, and then they laid them on the altar, and they were burnt, we might say cooked. And then what happened to it? Then we no longer call that an animal, we call it meat. Some call it that before it's cooked, but anyway, some of you sushi people out there or other things that like to eat it without it even being cooked. But in any event, what did they do with all the meat? This was the provision, and of course it wasn't just animal sacrifices. They had to bring of their tithes from their crops. So there was lots of food that was supposed to be brought in daily. What commandment did the children of Israel have that was not just the daily sacrifice? What was going to provide for all that? You have one tribe in Israel, the tribe of Levi, of which the priests, all the priests were Levites. It's that situation where all priests were Levites, but not all Levites were priests, right? There was one family of the tribe of Levi that the priests came from. They had to be descendants of Aaron, the high priest, that brother of Moses. Only they could serve as priests. The rest of the Levites, which would be the vast majority of the tribe, had a supporting role for the priests in their work. But they all, that whole tribe, was set apart, dedicated to serving the Lord, to do his work full time. The Lord was their inheritance. That's how God phrased that a number of times. They were not given a land inheritance in Canaan. So when they divided the land by lot, the tribe of Levi, did not get a portion of the land divided to them because the Lord was their inheritance. The house of Joseph got a double portion, as Joseph was given that aspect of the birthright that would have been Reuben's, the firstborn of Jacob. Because of his sin, that was taken from him. So the house of Joseph, Manasseh and Ephraim got separate inheritances. Levi didn't get one. So it's still, the number was still 12, but that's how it was 12 minus Levi, but double for Joseph. But anyway, Levi didn't have a land inheritance. Their job was to serve the Lord on a full-time basis. So they didn't have a large territory to have their farms and grow their crops. They were working full-time for the Lord, so how did they eat? The Lord provided through the tithes and the sacrifices that they had on a daily basis. That was their food. So that was a big part of this. Now, when the children of Israel have forsaken the Lord as they have. I mean, they weren't going to the temple. They weren't making these sacrifices. They weren't observing the Passover. Were they giving their tithes? During all those years when they had forsaken the Lord, the temple shut up. Are they still bringing their tithes? Of course not. They're not doing any of that. So as this is, everything's being restarted now under Hezekiah, but they're going to have a need for an abundance of these animals to be sacrificed here at the start, as this has been, as they're doing this again. Well, they don't have a stockpile of animals since nobody's been bringing that. So who's the one that provides for all that here at the outset when they don't have this large number right here on the spot at the beginning? Who's the one that made that provision so this could be done? Hezekiah himself, it tells us here. At the very beginning there of chapter 31 in 2 Chronicles, verse 1 tells us how they were throwing down the altars and these places for the idol worshiping that they had been engaged in. They did this throughout Judah and in the northern kingdom of Israel too, as we mentioned. And then in verse 2, Hezekiah appointed the courses for the priests and Levites so that they would be doing their jobs, which they hadn't been. So now they're back in their role, full-time serving the Lord, doing the works that they had been designated and appointed for. And so then in verse 3, it says that Hezekiah appointed also the king's portion of his substance for the burnt offerings, to wit, for the morning and evening burnt offerings and the burnt offerings for the Sabbaths. And for the new moons and for the set feasts, as is written in the law of the Lord. So Hezekiah is giving of his own substance to enable these commandments to be obeyed. So he wasn't calling on everybody to obey these commandments of God that they had forsaken, while he himself is somehow exempted from that. That's not Hezekiah at all. There's no hypocrisy here. He's not saying you people need to do right while he's not. So he is most certainly doing his part. He had already provided when they remained that extra week in observing the Passover and they continued for another week. I mean, who helped with the provision for all that mass of people there in Jerusalem for an additional week? Well, Hezekiah gave for that too. We looked at some verses our last time near the close of it that about Hezekiah. And what do we know about Hezekiah and his material circumstances? Had the Lord blessed him with great substance? Yes. And so God had given him a great abundance. So he was using of the abundance that God gave him to serve the Lord with. I mean, whatever God gives us, what are we supposed to do with it? We're supposed to serve the Lord, of course, with whatever we have. And that's what Hezekiah was doing. So he was zealous to make sure all of these commandments of the Lord were being observed. And to whatever extent he needed to be involved in that himself, he was doing that. And even giving of what he had personally to make sure these things were done. And he understood he was merely giving of what God gave to him in the first place. And so he's willingly doing that to ensure the obedience of all of these commandments. So we see, again, the goodness of Hezekiah and all of that. All right, now as we move forward in starting here in verse 4 of 2 Chronicles 31, this isn't the end of it, but it says, "Moreover, he commanded the people that dwelt in Jerusalem to give the portion of the priests and the Levites, that they might be encouraged in the law of the Lord." Now, what portion is he referring to there? What was the portion of the people that they were to give of the priests and of the Levites. What was that portion? It was the tenth part, which is what the word tithe means, the tenth part. That's the meaning of the word. So that he's referring to the tithing. In fact, he's going to use that word here coming up in the next, the following verses. But that's what that's in reference to. That was the portion that the people were to give. And right there, it's making it, there's another clear reminder of what was behind that. As the Lord had one of, they had 12 tribes in Israel, of course. One of the 12 was set aside for doing the Lord's work on a full-time basis. They did not have the land and to be able to, or nor the time for them to be able to engage in the activities to provide growing the crops and doing all of that. Their job wasn't to be farmers, and they weren't given the land to do so. They didn't have the time to do so. Their time was given to do the Lord's work. So you had one out of 12 tribes set aside for that. That meant the other 11 tribes had to support with the provisions for food and everything else that the Levites, the tribe of Levi, needed. Well, if you have 11 tribes giving 10% of all they have, is that going to work out numbers-wise where the one out of 12 gets what they need? I mean, that number breaks down quite nicely there, doesn't it? I mean, the Lord designed it that way, of course. That's why it breaks down nicely. That's how he designed it. So God worked all of that out. So when everybody was giving their tithes, then should the Levites, the priests and Levites, would they be well provided for, where they would not have to be concerned or worried about, well, how am I going to eat? I mean, if people aren't bringing the daily sacrifices for the priests and Levites, what does that mean? They got no food. So that was something very important. And if the tithes stop, I mean, they're not going to be able to eat. So there all of this was by the Lord's design for what the people needed to do to serve the Lord. There were several aspects to what these things were. Of course, the sacrifices themselves were shadows of what could not be accomplished until Christ came. So there was that aspect of things, but it was also this part that was for the physical provision for the priests and Levites, so that they, as it says, they might be encouraged in the law of the Lord. Well, how encouraged are they going to be to do the Lord's work if the rest of the people aren't encouraged in the Lord's work to give what they're supposed to give of their tithes so that they can be supported? How encouraging would that be to go do your job for the Lord when nobody else is, and then you don't even have the food you need to eat to live? It'd be kind of hard to be concentrating on all your work you're supposed to be doing for the Lord when you're having to be concerned about where your next meal's coming from, right? And so that was the point. Now, if they're all giving like they should, then the priests and Levites, they don't have to be concerned about any of that, do they? They can be encouraged in the law of the Lord to be focused on what their job was. And so it was going to help their brethren to be encouraged in their work. So again, they would all be encouraging each other in this work of the Lord if they're doing that. So Hezekiah is, I mean, he's giving of his substance himself. But now, in addition to getting all of these other things reestablished, the giving of the tithes was going to be an important part of that. And it says in verse 5, "And as soon as the commandment came abroad, the children of Israel brought in abundance the first fruits of corn, wine, and oil, and honey, and of all the increase of the fields, and the tithe of all things brought they in abundantly." So there again, he shows that's that portion, that tenth part. This is about the tithes. If we can, for a moment, go back to Numbers chapter 18, we see uh, in in the law of the Lord where this commandment was given. This is one of a couple of prominent passages about the giving of the tithes that the Lord had commanded. In Numbers chapter 18, starting in verse 20, it says, "And the Lord spake unto Aaron, Thou shalt have no inheritance in their land, neither shalt thou have any part among them. I am thy part, and thine inheritance among the children of Israel. And behold, I have given the children of Levi all the tenth in Israel for an inheritance, for their service which they serve, even the service of the tabernacle of the congregation." So we see that, how that was God's commandment and what it was for. So the Lord was their inheritance, and he said that he gave the whole tribe of Levi that tenth part, the tithes from all the other tribes, for their substance. Verse 22, "Neither must the children of Israel henceforth come nigh the tabernacle of the congregation, lest they bear sin and die. But the Levites shall do the service of the tabernacle of the congregation, and they shall bear their iniquity. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations, that among the children of Israel they have no inheritance. But the tithes of the children of Israel, which they offer as a heave offering unto the Lord, I have given to the Levites to inherit. Therefore I have said unto them, among the children of Israel, they shall have no inheritance." So there's the basis of it. That's what the tithes were for. It's very clear. It was for the physical support of the one tribe that was set aside and designated to do the Lord's work and the service of the tabernacle, of course, later the temple when it was built, which is what the situation is now under Hezekiah. But that's what the tithes were for. I'll just give you another passage in Leviticus 27, verses 30 through 34. There's also very similar words given there regarding the tithes. An additional part of that was that the children of Israel were responsible for giving of the very best, they couldn't give the lesser part for their tithes of what the Lord had given to them. Now later we have an example in the book of Nehemiah, which is not only later in the ordering of the books here of the Old Testament, it is chronologically later. All right, if we think of the time frame of the events here in Israel's history, right now we're almost at 722 BC. There are few numbers or dates I don't expect there's going to be any grading on Judgment Day based on our giving questions about the date where some event occurred in the Bible. I don't think that's what we are going to have to be worried about there. So it's not like we have to memorize dates and things. If you're inclined that way, this is the way the Lord made me. I like being able to think of things in a linear fashion or chronological way to have something to hang it on. But if you're at all that way, a date that may be helpful to you, 722 BC is a good one. It's the date when that was the year that Samaria fell, the fall of the northern kingdom of Israel, and where they were taken into captivity by the Assyrians, what was left. So that was a major pivotal date in Israel's history. Another one is 586 BC. That's when the Jerusalem fell at the Babylonians, and the temple was destroyed and all of that. So, which tells you it was 136 years between the destruction of the northern kingdom. Judah was on its own for 136 years, and then they met their own destruction because they didn't learn. Only a remnant was saved into captivity in Babylon. But so those are a couple of years just maybe you want to keep in mind. But it does tell us, though, that right now we're in that we're a little over 700 years before Christ would come at this point in our study about Hezekiah. So we're very close to 722 BC at the fall of the northern kingdom of Israel. And it's going to be another 136 years after that before Judah falls. All right, well, after 70 years, then the captive, the remnant that was preserved in captivity in Babylon, they returned to Israel, to the land, and they rebuilt the temple. And then after that, they rebuilt the walls. Now, Nehemiah, which is what the book of Nehemiah is about, was one who was a cupbearer to King Artaxerxes, and he was sent by the Persian king at his request to go help with the and to lead the rebuilding of the walls of the city of Jerusalem, and that's the main subject or event that's in the book of Nehemiah. So that's after the captives return. So this is now looking into the future, some 200 years from where Hezekiah is, just to have a, maybe a mental idea of how far we're going into the future. So we're now zooming forward about 200 years into the future from where we are in 2 Chronicles 31 to go briefly to the book of Nehemiah to see this issue crop up again. That didn't mean that as a pun. But anyway, so this issue comes up again in the book of Nehemiah because it wasn't long after, and this is one of the sad things, the captives come back. They're full of zeal, just like we see the people in Hezekiah's time here. They're full of zeal and doing the Lord's work. What's going to happen after this generation, after Hezekiah and these people pass on? What's going to happen with Hezekiah's own son, Manasseh, and the people of the next generation? They're not going to be filled with that zeal to serve the Lord. And they're going to go right back to the idols, and they're going to even do worse than what was being done under Ahaz and right before Hezekiah became king. Well, just like we see when the captives returned from Babylon, they were full of zeal, rebuilt the temple, and they were doing the Lord's will. That generation those were the good figs. They had hearts to know the Lord. They'd repented, and they were zealously seeking God again. How long did it take after that generation came back before the people started messing up again? Well, within the next generation, we start to see a slide, and that's where Nehemiah comes in. And so he's dealing with the children of that, those captives that had returned. And we're going to, another generation, the next generation is what we see at the close of the Old Testament period and with Malachi, where the priests themselves are bringing they are forsaking their duties and the Lord's rebuking the priests for their wickedness. So things spiritually start going downhill again. Now, they don't ever return. They don't go back to idols, but they do neglect to keep the Lord's commandments. And this tithing issue comes up again in Nehemiah chapter 13. So you got a problem with the priests and the people here. In Nehemiah 13, verse 4, it says, "Before this, Eliashib the priest, having the oversight of the chamber of the house of our God, was allied unto Tobiah." Now, Tobiah was one of these Gentiles. He, along with Sanballat, were the chief enemies of Nehemiah and did everything they could to hinder and stop the work of rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem. And this Tobiah, the chief enemy of Nehemiah and the children of Israel there in Jerusalem, is allied with the high priest. It's going to tell us that he's son-in-law to the high priest. So they're making marriages with these people, and that was one of the other things that Nehemiah dealt with, was they're marrying already. They're starting to marry with these people, these Gentile people that are there that the Lord did not want them to make marriages with. And this is even being done by the high priest. So now that makes the high priest tied together as family with the chief opponents of Israel and the arch enemy of Nehemiah himself. So that's what Nehemiah is having to deal with. He's not only having to deal with the opposition from Sanballat, Tobiah, and these others, but from within, where they're tied in by marriage, even to the high priest of Israel. And so one of the great rooms that was there, adjoined to the temple that was supposed to be for storehouse for the tithes, Eliashib, the high priest, has given that room, that's a little private, a private room for Tobiah to use. I mean, this is, it's astounding, this corruption that's here. And it says in verse 5 that he had prepared for him a great chamber where aforetime they had the meat offerings, the frankincense, and the vessels, and the tithes of the corn, the new wine, and the oil, which were commanded to be given to the Levites and the singers and the porters and the offerings of the priests. But in all this was, but in all this time was not I at Jerusalem. For in the 32nd year of Artaxerxes, king of Babylon, came I unto the king, and after certain days obtained I leave of the king. And I came to Jerusalem, and understood of the evil that Eliashib did for Tobiah in preparing him a chamber in the courts of the house of God. You think he would have done that if Nehemiah had been in Jerusalem at the time? Not a chance. So Nehemiah comes back. He had been there in Jerusalem, they rebuilt the walls, then he went back to Persia for a time, and then he returns to Jerusalem. Here's what's happened while he was away. And he comes back, and it says, "And it grieved me sore. Therefore I cast forth all the household stuff of Tobiah out of the chamber. Then I commanded, and they cleansed the chambers, and thither brought I again the vessels of the house of God with the meat offerings and the frankincense. And I perceived that the portions of the Levites had not been given them. For the Levites and the singers that did the work were fled, every man, every one to his field. Then I contended with the rulers and said, Why is the house of God forsaken? And I gathered them together and set them in their place. Then brought all Judah the tithe of the corn and the new wine and the oil into the treasuries." And then he set the ones over that. So look at what happens in Nehemiah's time. Well, the people quit giving their tithes. Now, was it, what drove that there in this case? Well, here you have the high priest himself that gives his daughter to one of these Gentiles and then donates the big room that's there for the storage of all the tithes to be given to the Levites, gives that to this guy to use. And so where are they going to put all this stuff? So even the high priest doesn't even care about the tithes or what's going on with the service of the Lord, that they're provided for like they should. And obviously the people were discouraged when they don't even have the place to put that. They quit giving. And now the Levites are going out there trying to find some place to grow their food so they can live. And that's what Nehemiah finds when he returns to Jerusalem. So he fixed that problem right there. Booted Tobiah out and cleansed that chamber. I love the mental picture I get just seeing him when them hosing down that room to cleanse it from that Gentile that had been in there that Tobiah has married his daughter to, and I mean that the Eliashib the high priest has, and I can just see him standing there with his arms folded with a cloud of steam coming out. But anyway, he was this was obviously a very wicked man and had forsaken all of his duties and didn't even care about what was going on for the service of the Lord to do such a thing. I mean, that was wrong on so many levels. But Nehemiah fixed it. But it just shows you what would happen when the people aren't given their tithes. In that case, the people's discouragement was driven by from what the high priest himself was doing there. Just like really it reminds us of Hophni and Phinehas and how they caused the people of Israel to despise the sacrifices and offerings that they were supposed to make with all the wickedness they were doing with it when they were eating the fat and all of that. Lord willing, we'll have some more of that tonight. Not the fat, but the study about it. But anyway, so these as those priests in that time were causing the people to be discouraged about their offerings, and they weren't doing it anymore. Well, that's what happened in Nehemiah's time. In this case, everybody's quit. In Hezekiah, or before Hezekiah's time, they'd all quit doing the Lord's will and quit obeying those commandments. And then what are the Levites? I mean, how are they going to be encouraged to do their work if they don't have their provisions? What do they end up doing? Like what happened in Nehemiah's time? They're out there trying to find some way to grow some food. They better hold themselves a garden and start growing some food, or they're not going to have anything to eat. So that's what they were doing. How are they going to be doing the Lord's work if they're having to do that so they can live? That's not the way it was supposed to be. So Hezekiah, of course, knows all of those purposes for these commandments. He's going to have the priests and the Levites doing their jobs. He wants them encouraged in their work, so the people need to be given of their tithes. Now, with all that, we can make a little aside here. We've got our plates. On this day, the Lord has commanded us to give as he has prospered us. Are we going to give our tithes today here on this Lord's Day? We're not going to be giving our tithes. That was an Old Testament commandment. I mean, are we divided into 12 physical tribes, and is one twelfth of us of a tribe that's been reserved to do the Lord's work, where the other 11 twelfths needs to be giving their 10% of everything to make the physical provisions for the ones of us who are of that designated? We don't have that system anymore. That was physical Israel, which was a shadow of spiritual Israel. Now, who are the Levites and spiritual Israel, which is the Lord's church? Which of us are the designated Levites to be serving the Lord among us? All of us. We are the holy and the royal priesthood. So we're all the spiritual children of Levi, to use the exact language of Malachi chapter 3. Of course, 1 Peter 2 refers to us as, we're all referred to as that holy priesthood and royal priesthood. That's all of us. So we're all to be making those spiritual sacrifices to the Lord as the spiritual children of Levi. So we are not in that arrangement that the Lord had where, like physical Israel, where we need to give and are commanded to give and the tithes, as we see, it was a tenth of all they had. It wasn't just a 10% of their take-home pay, was it? They were to give a tenth part of all they had. So when they grew their crops, what were they supposed to do with a tenth of that? And they weren't supposed to pick out the lousy tenth. That's the part of the Leviticus 27 covers that. But they were to take a tenth of whatever they grew. That was to go to the Lord. And a tenth of whatever else that their animals, a tenth of all that the Lord gave them. That was a tenth of everything. So, I mean, people that talk about giving their tithes today, do they do that? And if they're going to use the Old Testament words and as the basis for that, well, again, of course, we have the problem. If we put ourselves under tithing, then we have to. Can you just pick and choose part of it and say, well, I'm going to do the tithing. I'm going to do the tenth part, but I'm only going to apply it to my take home pay and not to everything. That wasn't the commandment in the Old Testament. If you're going to take that Old Testament commandment, can you just pick, choose, and redefine it like you want to? Or would that obligate us to do it exactly like it says? And not only that, what do we know from Galatians 5, 1 through 4? If we put ourselves under that commandment, then what other commandments of the old law are we then duty-bound to follow? All of it. And then when we don't do all of it, that very law is going to curse us. And then we're fallen from Christ, severed from Christ and fallen from grace. Do any of us want to sign up for that? Of course not. So that's why we don't have a Christian Sabbath, which means seventh day. This is the Lord's Day, the first day of the week. We don't do Christian tithing. Those are some of the Old Testament commandments of the law of Moses that are not carried over to the New Testament, and for a reason. So we do give on this day, the first day of the week, but we're under the law of Christ and what he commands us for our giving, and it's not tithing. We are to give as the Lord has prospered us, and to do so abundantly and cheerfully. We have a number of very good passages that we frequently read from at the time when we observe that commandment. But when we're looking at what was going on here in Hezekiah's time as he's restoring the tithing, so with the design of encouraging the priests and Levites to be able to do the Lord's work, where they're not having to worry about, well, how am I going to eat? They don't need to be concerned about that. If all the rest of their brethren are encouraged and they're in the Lord and doing their part and they're going to give what they're supposed to give, then the priests and Levites will be encouraged in the law of the Lord. And so that's why Hezekiah commanded all the children of Israel, and they brought in the abundance of their first fruits, the corn, the wine, the oil, the honey, and of all the increase of the fields, and the tithe of all things brought they in abundantly, it says in 2 Chronicles 31:5. And concerning the children of Israel and Judah that dwelt in the cities of Judah, they also brought in the tithe of the oxen and sheep, and the tithe of the holy things which were consecrated unto the Lord their God, and laid them by heaps. In the third month they began to lay the foundation of the heaps, and finished them in the seventh month. All right, which month did they keep the Passover? Now, which month was the Passover normally kept? First month. But they invoked that exception that the Lord had provided in Numbers 9 for observing the Passover in the second month. That was in the previous chapter. So this is now in the third month. So this is, and remember, they kept an additional week. So it was starting on the 15th day of the month. So that carried to the end of the second month. So how long after the observance of the Passover does Hezekiah delay before doing all of these things we're reading about right here? None. I mean, that 2 weeks, if you observe the Passover on the 15th day of the second month, and then they kept the Feast of Unleavened Bread not for one but for 2 weeks, 2 weeks after the 15th, that carries you to the end of the second month, doesn't it? So here they are starting in the third month, bringing in all of these tithes, and they're bringing them, laying them in heaps, and they keep this rolling until the seventh month. So this is a four-month work they're doing now. But when we look at these little pieces of information the Lord gives us here with Hezekiah's work, I mean, he starts on day one becoming king. I mean, this man is on fire, isn't he? As far as seeking to have all of God's commandments obeyed, and he's putting it all in order right from the beginning, and he's not wasting a day getting everything going back like it's supposed to. So here they are for 4 months bringing all this in. Verse 8 says, and when Hezekiah and the princes came and saw the heaps, they blessed the Lord as his people Israel. Then Hezekiah questioned with the priests and Levites concerning the heaps. And Azariah, the chief priest of the house of Zadok, answered him and said, since the people began to bring the offerings into the house of the Lord, we have had enough to eat and have left plenty. For the Lord hath blessed his people, and that which is left is this great store. Then Hezekiah commanded to prepare chambers in the house of the Lord, and they prepared them. And brought in the offerings and the tithes and the dedicated things faithfully, over which Conaniah the Levite was ruler, and Shemaiah his brother was the next. And Jehiel and Azariah and Nahath and Azahel and Jeremoth and Jozabad and Eliel and Ismachiah and Mahath and Benaiah were overseers under the hand of Conaniah and Shemaiah his brother at the commandment of Hezekiah the king, and Azariah the ruler of the house of God. And Korah the son of Imnah the Levite The porter toward the east was over the freewill offerings of God to distribute the oblations of the Lord and the most holy things. And next him was Eden and Menahemon and Jeshua and Shemaiah, Amariah and Shechaniah in the cities of the priests and their set office to give to their brethren by courses as well to the great as to the small. Beside their genealogy of males from 3 years old and upward, even unto everyone that entereth into the house of the Lord, his daily portion for their service and the charges according to their courses, both to the genealogy of the priests by the house of their fathers and the Levites from 20 years old and upward in their charges by their courses, and to the genealogy of all their little ones, their wives and their sons and their daughters through all the congregation. For in their set offerings they sanctified themselves in holiness. Also the sons of Aaron, the priests, which were in the fields of the suburbs of their cities, in every several city, the men that were expressed by name to give portions to all the males among the priests and to all that were reckoned by genealogies among the Levites. And thus did Hezekiah throughout all Judah and wrought that which was good and right and truth before the Lord his God. And in every work that he began in the service of the house of God and in the law and in the commandments to seek his God, he did it with all his heart and prospered. It's a great conclusion there at that the end of that chapter. A few things, and we want to hone in a little bit more on those last statements made in the chapter at next week, as we're just about out of time now, but a couple of things that we want to also note from our reading there is he's describing the bringing in of all of these offerings, and here are these heaps, and even after the physical provisions are given to all these priests and Levites, there's much left over. So these storehouses are built there adjacent to the temple. Now this model was followed with the second temple that was built by the captives that returned from Israel, which we were just reading about in Nehemiah's time as the main one for this that was in the next temple. That dumb priest in Nehemiah's time gave that to the use of that Gentile Tobiah. But anyway, here this high priest is Azariah of the house of Zadok, it tells us in verse 10, which is interesting. We don't have the names of a lot of the high priests. We're given a few here and there. Particularly after Solomon's time, we have a lot more of the names. This is another tie-in or preview to our study that we want to continue in tonight, that we had one lesson in a couple weeks ago as we were beginning a study about God's judgment of the house of Eli. Eli was his house... as being the one of the high priest that was going to come to an end, and the Lord pronounced that judgment to Levi because of the wickedness of Hophni and Phinehas, his sons, which we mentioned earlier also. But Eli didn't restrain them. He rebuked them with his mouth, but he didn't stop them and didn't remove them from their position. They continued to do all of their wickedness, and so God said he was going to destroy the house of Eli and take the priesthood and give it to a house that was going to be faithful. And which was the high priest when Abiathar was the last of the house of Eli and Solomon removed him? He was the one that suffered through all of David's sufferings, but then he backed Adonijah and his rebellion to try to be king after David, that brother of Solomon, instead of Solomon. So what did Solomon do with, well, Adonijah was killed. Abiathar was removed from being high priest. Solomon didn't kill him for his backing that rebellion because of all of his service under his father David and all that he suffered with David. So he wasn't killed. He was removed from the priesthood. That was the end of the house of Eli being high priest. So who was then made high priest under Solomon? Zadok himself, who was a descendant from going all the way back to Finney has. And we'll get back to that, Lord willing, tonight. But of a completely different son of Aaron. But here we're seeing that, just making the point here, the house of Zadok, now we're under Hezekiah, but is the house of Zadok still the house of the high priest in Israel now, what, 200 years, a little more than 200 years after Solomon? Zadok was high priest under Solomon. Here we are more than a little over 200 years later, and it's of the house of Zadok still. So when the Lord made that change and he gave the high priesthood to the house of Zadok, look at how that persisted through really through the rest of the recorded history that we have of Israel under the Old Testament. So there's another testimony to that. Another point there we see over and over again emphasized with these priests and Levites to be qualified for their offices. They were reckoned by genealogy. They couldn't just make a claim. It had to be proved in the records. And that's another important point, which we'll try to get to hone in on a little bit more, Lord willing, next week. And we can also see the organization of all this by Hezekiah. Everybody in their offices to do as what they were supposed to do. All right, so we're going to stop for there, and we should be able to finish up those last little bits for chapter 31, Lord willing, next Sunday morning.